This is program C-1150. It is Friday, so let me extend my usual thank you to all of you supporting Into the Word financially. Anyone that feels motivated by the Holy Spirit to assist them in that, all you have to do is write down the contact information you'll hear at the end of the program today, and you can send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address, and it will be applied to keeping this program on the radio. Fridays, I also challenge you to be very active in a local body of believers. Everybody needs a home church, and they need to stay plugged in there. So find a spot and get there regularly and be very active in service with the brothers and sisters that meet there. If you're looking for a home congregation and you're within driving distance of Elkhart East, why don't you come by and check us out? Maybe you'll decide to settle down with us. If you come to visit or just pop in for a moment or two, make sure you introduce yourself to me as one of my radio Bible students. I always like to meet the new faces. There are 136 days left until we go to Israel on our trip next year or this year. And I want you to get signed up now if you haven't done so and plan to go. Don't delay any longer. We need to get those names and numbers together. I want you to send your preacher. So spend some time this weekend talking to the leadership in your church about what you can do to make sure your preacher goes on this journey. We've got quite a few preachers going right now, and I intend to help them enjoy their very first time there and to come back on fire, preaching and teaching about the Bible stories that they've been able to see the places firsthand. We're going to continue in our study in the book of Revelation now. We are thinking about Revelation chapter 20, verse 4, which is that we will be resurrected and transformed and rule and reign with Jesus for 1,000 years. So we're talking about the millennial reign of Christ. And right now, I'm using my Living in the Last Days prophecy seminar notes to go over some of the Old Testament passages that describe what life will be like during the millennium. Because even though the New Testament is the only place that you'll find in the book of Revelation a 1,000-year reign, there is plenty of places that have talked about it well ahead of time. And so I'm looking at my notes. If you want a copy of them, go to the intotheword.net site. Go to the PDF resource section and you'll find them. I'm looking at page 102. We'd been looking at quite a few references in the book of Isaiah. There's a couple of long ones that I really don't want to go in detail to in Isaiah chapters 43 and 44. Isaiah 65, starting at verse 8, also has a beginning of a pretty good long section. Instead, I want to zero in on just a portion of that section. So Isaiah chapter 65, verse 17, which actually uses some languages we've been using in our study of the book of Revelation, and that is this: "For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former things will not be remembered or come to mind." So we know that when Jesus Christ comes, the old heaven and old earth are going to pass away with a great noise, in a great deal of heat. We've got the book of 1 Peter that talks about that, 2 Peter. The new heaven and new earth is going to come into existence simultaneously, instantaneously. It'll be very similar to what happens with the bodies of the living righteous. They will be instantaneously transformed. And so the earth and the heavens, the old stuff gone, new stuff back in place where they belong. Verse 18 of Isaiah 65 says, "But be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create. For behold, I create Jerusalem for rejoicing and her peoples for gladness. And I will also rejoice in Jerusalem and be glad in my people." So we've got not just the new heaven and new earth, we've got Jerusalem that becomes a brand new capital city from which Jesus will rule and reign as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Now, this city is described in an interesting fashion here. He says, there will no longer be heard in her the voice of weeping and the sound of crying. So grief is going to be a thing of the past, because in the millennial period, everything is good. We have moved back to God's original intention for creation, that it was very good. Verse number 20, no longer will there be in it an infant who lives but a few days, or an old man who does not live out his days. Now, the righteous people have been resurrected and transformed at the second coming of Jesus. And so they're not the ones that we have in mind here. They are eternal. They are immortal now. This seems to be a reference to the mortals that they are administering. And we've dealt with this issue several times now, and I've tried to give you my opinion on what we're to be expecting here. And that is, during the millennial period, there will be a large number of people who have not yet made their choice one way or the other to serve God. They will be people who survived the 3.5 years of the day of the Lord because they didn't take the mark of the beast, but they didn't accept Jesus as their Savior. So they're going to go into the millennium where they're going to be given a chance to make their minds up. I think that perhaps all of the people from the past that didn't get a chance to make their minds up will also be resurrected and given a good mortal body to live in, to make their minds up in. This will probably include babies, little children that never got a chance to reach that point where they knew the difference between right and wrong and could make their own free will choice. It might include people from the past with diminished mental capacity that now have that full capacity and can make up their free will choice as to whether or not to embrace Jesus as their king. It might include people who, for whatever other reason, never got the clear-cut choice given to them. Now they do. So they will be in their mortal bodies, and there will not be little babies, and I think there will be little babies at the beginning of the millennium. There will not be little babies that only live a few days, because we're now in the perfect environment. And their bodies have somehow been touched by the renewal of this environment. And so that's not going to happen. They're not going to just die. And old men that don't get a chance to live their full years. And then he goes on and describes even what's expected from that. It says, for the youth will die at the age of 100. Now, the Hebrew is a little bit more to the idea that someone who dies at 100 will be thought to be a kid. Now, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that they're dying at that age. It's just that if they did die at 100, they'd go, wow, they were just a kid. And the one who doesn't reach the age of 100 will be thought to be accursed. And then it says, actually, it's not here. It's in another passage. It will be the idea that they will have the age of trees, which when Isaiah and others were writing, they were thinking about some of the big trees in the cedars of Lebanon that lived a long, long time, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So the expectation is, even among the mortals, they will live for hundreds of years. And that's because of the environment that they're in. Think about what happened after the fall. When Adam and Eve sinned, they still lived for almost 1,000 years. Even in a world that was under the curse and which was falling into entropy, most people prior to the flood lived into their 900s. And it was only after the flood, when the world was changed radically, that the lifespan began deteriorating until it was down below 120 and then down into almost pretty much where the average is today, 70s and 80s for most people that do not fall into some sort of accident or illness earlier. All right, so we apparently in the millennial period are going to see lifespans like before the flood. Verse 21, they will build houses and inhabit them. They will also plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They will not build and another inhabit. They will not plant and another eat. For as the lifetime of a tree, so will be the days of my people. That was the phrase I was remembering. And my chosen ones will wear out the work of their hands. So effectively, we see here again described something from elsewhere. Agriculture becomes the norm. That was what it was in the original design of creation. Adam and Eve were given the garden to enjoy, to work in, not hard labor, just enjoyable labor. And that's going to be what the people are going to be doing in the millennium. And they will live for the lifetime of a tree. In fact, they will wear stuff out. They will build stuff, and because they live so long, they will outlast the stuff they build. And so this is a great blessing that we're seeing described here as part of the millennium. They will not labor in vain or bear children for calamity, for they are the offspring of those blessed by Yahweh and their descendants with them. So they are not going to have a vain life. They will have an enjoyable life. Now, we did have a phrase here that I want to touch on, and that is they will not bear children for calamity. There is a disagreement between different groups when talking about the millennium, whether or not there will be children born during the millennium. I do not think there will be. I think that everyone that goes into the millennium are the ones who are going to grow up making their minds up as to whether or not they will serve the Lord. I don't think there will be fresh additions to that number. However, if those who say there will be are correct, then I would put forward my conviction that they will all be able to reach an age of accountability before the 1,000 years are over. So my expectation is if there are people born during the millennium, that at some time toward the end of it, God will stop any new births so that everyone will have the adult capacity of choosing right and wrong and choosing Jesus or not. So that's just my opinion on that. Verse 24, it will come about to pass that before they call, I'll answer. While they're still speaking, I will hear. So there's this instantaneous relationship. Jesus is at the centerpiece of this all. And then something we've read in another passage, the wolf and the lamb will graze together. The lion will eat straw like the ox. The dust will be the serpent's food. They will do no evil or harm in all my holy mountain, says Yahweh. So even the animals are at peace with one another and with humanity. And that, I think, is again going back to the way things were in the Garden of Eden before sin entered the world. And so that's going to be a great thing to see. Let's leave the book of Isaiah and go to another prophetic book, a little prophetic book that we have actually looked at already in regards to the book of Revelation, and that is Joel. Joel chapter number 3, and we go all the way down to verse number 17 in order to kind of see this. It says, then you will know that I am Yahweh your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. So Jerusalem will be holy, and strangers will pass through it no more. In that day, the mountains will drip with sweet wine, and the hills will flow with milk. This is a description of prosperity. in an agricultural society. There's more than enough to go around. And then this, all the brooks of Judah will flow with water. In the biblical lands, many of the streams are wet weather streams. They only flow during the wet weather season, so basically winter. Otherwise, they just have a small trickle or they dry up altogether. But the prediction about the millennium is the environment of the new heaven and the new earth is going to have water in these streams all year round. So that's a big change. And then we have this that we've seen before. A spring will go out from the house of Yahweh to water the valley of Shittim. The valley of Shittim is the Dead Sea Valley, specifically the Jordan Valley immediately north of the Dead Sea. And so this is the spring of the water of life that comes up by the throne of Jesus and makes a river that goes both directions, east and west. And the one that goes down into the Valley of Shittim passes through the newly formed Valley of the Mount of Olives. And this is all part of the realignment of the landscape of the Holy Land. Then the next thing that we want to read is verse 19. Egypt will become a waste. Edom will become a desolate wilderness because of the violence done to the sons of Judah, in whose land they have shed innocent blood. So there is going to be a problem, at least at the very beginning of the millennium, so at the tail end of the 3.5 years, with Egypt and Edom that are troublemakers for Israel. But I think the Egypt one is clearly going to be reversed, because there are several passages dealing with the millennium that talks about Egypt belonging to the Lord, the people there belonging to the Lord, and there being a highway of holiness that goes through Egypt up to the house of Yahweh. But Edom comes off really bad in many of the millennial passages. In fact, several of the millennial passages, it almost sounds as if Edom is hell. And Edom, in this case, is immediately to the south and east of the Dead Sea. And so it sounds like it's going to be a bad place. Verse number 20, but Judah will be inhabited forever, and Jerusalem for all generations, and I will avenge their blood, which I've not avenged, for Yahweh dwells in Zion. So the core of the new heaven and new earth is Jerusalem and Judah, the promised land, and this highway of holiness that we've talked about before. Let's pop over to Jeremiah next for another one of our passages. Jeremiah chapter number 30, and we're going to go all the way down to verse 18 for our passage. And this is what it says. Thus says Yahweh, behold, I will restore the fortunes of the tents of Jacob and have compassion on his dwelling places, and the city will be rebuilt on its ruin, and the palace will stand on its rightful place. So it sounds like we're talking about Jerusalem becoming the capital again. From them will proceed thanksgiving and the voice of those who celebrate. And I will multiply them, and they will not be diminished, and I will honor them, and they will not be insignificant. Their children also will be as formerly, and their congregation will be established before me, and I will punish all their oppressors. Their leader shall be one of them, and their ruler shall come forth from their midst, and I will bring him near, and he shall approach me. For who would dare to risk his life to approach me, declares Yahweh. You will be my people, and I will be your God. And that verse gets kind of talked about in other places as well. So we've got this promise that there will be a leader coming from Israel that will be God's representative over Israel. In chapter 31, we've got a description, something along this line. At that time, declares Yahweh, I will be the God of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people. Thus says Yahweh, the people who survived the sword found grace in the wilderness. Israel, when it went to find its rest, Yahweh appeared to him from afar, saying, I've loved you with an everlasting love, and therefore I've drawn you with loving kindness. Again, I will build you, and you will be rebuilt, a virgin of Israel, and you again will take up your tambourines and go forth to the dances of the merrymakers. So we've got this description of celebration. There used to be all these problems, but now that we've come to the new heaven and new earth, now that Jesus has arrived on the scene as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, there's celebration. And then we've also got, again, a description of great prosperity in taking care of the earth. It says here, you will plant vineyards on the hills of Samaria. Planters will plant and will enjoy them. And there will be a day when watchmen on the hill of Ephraim call out, arise, let's go up to Zion to Yahweh our God. So everybody's going to be excited about going to Jerusalem. For thus says Yahweh, sing aloud with gladness for Jacob, and shout among the chief of the nations, proclaim, give praise, and say, O Yahweh, save your people, the remnant of Israel. And remember, name of God, the special name of God, Yahweh, Lord, in close proximity to the word salvation or save, that's Jesus being prophetically addressed there. And so Jesus is in the midst of all of this. And we keep on going through all of those verses until we get down to verse number 27. Behold, days are coming, declares Yahweh, when I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and the seed of beast. Excuse me, I went too far down. That's not where I wanted to be. Verse number 23. Thus says Yahweh Sabaoth, the God of Israel, once again they will speak this word in the land of Judah and in its cities when I restore their fortunes. Yahweh bless you, O abode of righteousness, O holy hill. Judah and all its cities will dwell together in it, the farmer and they who go about with flocks, for I satisfy the weary ones and refresh everyone who languishes. At that time I awoke and looked, and my sleep was pleasant to me. So Jeremiah is getting this vision of this wonderful time and place that is going to come because God is remaking Jerusalem and getting rid of all of the sinful things because he's saving them in his way. There's a mention, by the way, of the highway again in verse 21, and we keep seeing that highway of holiness cited. In chapter 32 of Jeremiah, at verse 36, we've got some more things that kind of feed into this. It says this, now therefore, thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, concerning this city of which you say, it's given into the king, into the hand of the king of Babylon by sword, by famine, and by pestilence. Behold, I will gather them out of all the lands to which I've driven them in my anger, in my wrath, my great indignation, and I will bring them back to this place and make them dwell in safety. They will be my God, or my people, and I will be their God. And I will give them one heart and one way, that they may fear me always for their own good and for the good of their children after them. Now, this is very important in the book of Jeremiah, because Jeremiah is the last prophet before the first temple is destroyed. And he is talking about that a lot. And eventually it's going to be taken and destroyed. But he has been told to pass on to the Israelis that are going to see that there is coming a time when there will be a return to this very site by God's people, and they will be living righteous lives, and they will be his people, and he will be their God, and things will be good again. Verse 40, I will make an everlasting covenant with them that I will not turn away from them to do good, and I will put the fear of me in their hearts so that they will not turn away from me. and I will rejoice over them to do good, and will faithfully plant them in the land with all my heart and with all my soul. For thus says Yahweh, just as I brought them all this great disaster on this people, so I'm going to bring on them the good that I'm promising them. So here is this long-term promise made back 587 BC is when Jerusalem was destroyed by the Babylonians. So 2,500 years ago plus, this prophecy was made that even though God was bringing judgment at that time, he was looking forward to a time in the future where he would be able to bring them blessings on the exact same site. Now, in chapter 33, there's a gathering together that's mentioned that seems to be a reference to the resurrection and transformation of the saints that Paul talks about, the being gathered together to him in the air and being with him always. There's a Davidic leader that is mentioned, and we've talked about how David will be resurrected as well, and a promise that faithful Israel is going to be restored forever. And so all of that is still in the future to us. We're still looking for the second coming of Jesus and these prophecies in the book of Jeremiah to come to pass. Well, we're less than a minute left today. We are going to come back next week and kind of finish up some more of these things dealing with Old Testament passages about the millennial reign. So you might want to read ahead a little bit in Ezekiel. Actually, Ezekiel chapters 40 onward has some very interesting things that go to this. And the book of Zechariah. The last chapter in particular, we'll look at some things from that, and the book of Zephaniah. All of these are found in the notes as well. So have a great weekend, have a good celebration with your brothers and sisters in Christ, and I'll see you next week, Lord willing.